Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Absolutely Necessary. I'm Logan Tracy, and Dad, if you're listening, I'm running out of cash. I need $10, please. Joining me in the booth, as always, Jackson Layer, Jacob Masick. What's going on, guys? How was your weekend?
Pretty tight, you know?
Did you do anything fun?
Lots of fun stuff. Lots of good sports games this weekend. Really was pulling for the Browns, but you know, didn't happen this week versus the Steelers, but Baker Mayfield's still the GOAT.
All right.
Wow. Way to start the podcast. Well, I mean, my weekend was great up until the Vikings losing in a heartbreaker in New Orleans. I mean, in Minnesota, playing New Orleans. But yeah, overall, great week in sports. Really enjoyed seeing all the games being played out and seeing the Red Sox winning the World Series.
Good. Congrats to the Red Sox, people.
Congrats to Michael Waddell. Shout out Michael Waddell. Saints pulling out a big win, and I'm sure we'll talk about that game later. But to start the show, I do want to get into the World Series. Obviously, as I'm sure most of you have heard, the Red Sox just won the World Series in 5 games over the Los Angeles Dodgers. Steve Pierce, third baseman, wins the World Series MVP.
What a great story. Congrats, Steve.
That means a lot to him, more than anybody in his life.
Yep, I bet. Who cares about the World Series MVP?
All right, I know that while you guys may not have watched all the games, you watched a good portion of the series. I also watched a good portion of the series. So I'm going to start with Jackson. Jackson, what did you think about all 5 of the games? I know you were pulling for the Dodgers, and obviously it didn't go quite your way, but explain.
No, I mean, I saw that the Red Sox had the superior team in this one. Dodgers did get a win in their own hometown in that, was that the marathon game, right?
Marathon game 3, 18 game 3. Innings, mm-hmm. 7 hours, too many minutes.
Yep, and that was a well-earned win there, and unfortunately for the Dodgers, Clayton Kershaw couldn't keep the series alive as the Red Sox did what they did all season long.
Yeah, yeah. How many home runs did you let up? Was it 3?
Too many.
3 home runs.
Too many.
It was 3 home runs.
That's not a normal Kershaw effort right there. Who knows?
Excuse me. No, it was 3.
3 home runs. That's tough.
The Red Sox did in this game, game 5, score all their runs on home runs. In fact, every run scored in the game was a home run.
Wow.
Very rare, but again, just I think it was a very good series, a special series, and that's one of those stats that'll get lost in the shuffle. But, Jacob, what were your impressions of the series?
I was really just pulling for a competitive series. I didn't really analyze these teams too much. I thought they both had a lot of firepower in their teams. I actually saw them as mostly even. I just saw some of their players on the Dodgers didn't perform as high as I thought they would. Machado was very underwhelming for me in this series. It seemed like he just wasn't all there, especially hitting-wise. He didn't put it out there. And I think just the Red Sox used a better collection of pitchers, and they went for it all. And they used their starters in the 18-inning game. And they went all in to win it. And that's what I think you need to do in the World Series. You need to be willing to take risks to win in the major leagues.
I agree with you. That Game 3 strategy they had, obviously Game 3 went 18 innings, ended up using a lot of pitchers on both sides, but the Red Sox ended up using Nathan Eovaldi, who was scheduled to pitch Game 4 before that game, and a couple other starters. So really that series or that game could have been pretty detrimental. Maybe it goes the other way. Red Sox come out game 4 and lose. They're tired. They're obviously down, but they responded well, ended up winning game 4 and 5, and just that's even more props to them. I thought it was a great 2 games. Do you think it tops last year's World Series?
I don't think so. I mean, when you think about like the competitive nature of it all, I think that Jacob hits it on the nail. There wasn't that element this year. And even though that the LA Dodgers and the Red Sox gave us a huge nail biter of a game in game 3, I think the World Series last year was much more rigid to a word.
I mean, how can you not beat a series that goes 7 games? It doesn't make any sense. I don't think this game, it's comparable that this series, though this series had the 18-inning game and everything. And that may have felt right. like an extra game. I mean, it is equivalent yeah. to literally another game.
Right.
But the thing is, there's nothing like when the playoffs come down to the last game. That is just the best game. And obviously the Astros won 5-1, but still that environment is amazing.
Right, but and when you're thinking about like from the team aspect, like a Red Sox, if I was a Red Sox player, I would be like, this is a great World Series because that's me being confirmed that this is the team that's going to be pulling out championships for a while now. I mean, going 4-1 against a good Dodgers team in the NL, like that's solid. And you're beating the Astros, you're beating the Yankees getting into there. This was a good year for teams and a solid teamwork being used. And quite frankly, yeah, from the team aspect, you're looking at this as an encouraging note. If you're a fan, you're left wanting more.
I would argue that the Red Sox actually may have faced a better team in the Astros, who gave them a better shot in that series. So I think the Red Sox deserve this a lot. Because
oh,
I think I would even say the Astros were the best team in the major leagues. At least I thought so throughout the year, with just the firepower they have on that team. And
who
having,
can say no
having
no
won
defense.
The World Series that they have won in the recent
right.
history,
mm-hmm.
I would say that the Red Sox really deserve this championship.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the Red Sox are set up with a good young core to keep competing and trying for championships
mm-hmm.
the next couple of years. Just want to shout out David Price with an amazing Game 5 performance.
Yeah,
really silenced
absolutely.
His critics about his playoff performances to show up in this series. But Los Angeles is in a very different situation, kind of at crossroads. They have some
yeah.
good young talent on that team, but they also have some talent that they traded for they're going to lose. Obviously, the main focus will be Manny Machado. What did you guys think about Machado this series? He really disappointed
mm-hmm.
in some
oh,
ways.
Truly, truly.
And how do you think he responds to that maybe next year? Possibly with the Dodgers, possibly with another team.
Mm-hmm.
I do not think he will stay with the Dodgers. And I think that he's recognizes that they can make the World Series, but I think the Red Dodgers will not actually pay him the amounts. I believe the Dodgers value a serviceable shortstop and someone who can do that, but a lot of their firepower comes from the outfield, and that's where they like to stack a lot of their firepower, and they love, obviously, to use their first base and third baseman as power hitters. Just someone who's a serviceable shortstop and has less money will free up money for them to sign their outfield for a couple more years.
Remember as well, the Los Angeles Dodgers do have Corey Seager. Corey Seager was injured and out for most of this year.
Correct.
So they will get him back at the beginning of next year to be their starting shortstop.
Right, and going off Logan's point with Corey Seager coming back, there was, in this series, I saw no reason for Manny Machado to be re-signed by this team. Like, he didn't play to the hype that he was receiving coming from the Baltimore Orioles, saying that he was the missing piece, that this guy was going to bring a World Series back. I don't think that he lived up to that hype. I don't think that this was a guy who was fighting for a contract.
Well, even if, I think that this might put other teams off from signing him in the offseason.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
If a player
yeah.
can't perform
mm-hmm.
on the big stage, on the biggest stage, it kind of puts you off. Even though he may be an all-star this many times and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
If you go into the World Series and you lay a total egg, that's a lot of what people are saying are coming out of the Yankees camp, where
mm-hmm.
they're unsure now. Before they were like, oh, yes, let's get him if he comes out of the diamond.
Right.
Now
and
they're lukewarm on that.
Exactly, and that's going to make him, Manny Machado, think, oh, my God, I'm going to have to, like, feel my choices here very carefully because he can't be going for the big baller money that Aaron Judge is going to be getting and Giancarlo Stanton's already getting. He's going to have to settle. And that's why I'm thinking I'm not saying that this is going to happen, but there's a big chance that he's going to probably have to save the Dodgers because the Dodgers know what he is and how he plays and such. So they're going to give him an offer that's suitable to that kind of play. And I think he's going to have to try to take that because no team's going to offer.
I do not think the Dodgers will offer him.
You don't think they're going to offer at all?
I do not think they will because of the money that he will want.
Well, right,
so,
but I'm saying that he's going to settle.
Well, I don't think they want to destroy a relationship with him if in the future he was ever available. So I don't think they're going to lowball him at all. I think they'll keep it off of that, and I think other teams will jump on Machado. I know it may sound super negative, like all these things are happening that are so bad, but I know that other teams will jump on him and offer him. I think large contracts, just because there's teams in the major leagues that have excess money.
And they need him.
And they need him. Yep.
Remembering, this was supposed to be one of the bigger free agent classes that we've had in a long time. There was going to be
yeah.
all kinds of money thrown around. And Machado was one of the key pieces of that, with him and Bryce Harper, obviously, is probably going to be the big name that comes up in a lot of places this offseason to see where he goes. But another aspect of the Dodgers with contracts is Clayton Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw can opt out. He has come out and said, I have, I think it's a 3-day deadline to where he will decide to do that. Do you guys think Kershaw chooses to stay in Los Angeles or opts out and resigns? Can you really see him in anything else than a Dodger jersey?
No way.
Nope.
No.
He's staying
in Los Angeles. That's home for Kershaw. I think even if he opts out of that, they'll lay the money on the table for Kershaw and they'll make him his best offer.
And
I just can't see the Dodgers without Kershaw. No way.
All right. And just to wrap this up, one final question. It's obviously early. Season ended yesterday. But World Series predictions for next year. Who you guys got?
For me, I really loved what the Astros were doing during the whole season. It was unfortunate to see them knocked out as early as they were. But I think it's going to be an Astros, Cubs finish there. I think the Cubs are going to bounce back. Chris Bryant's going to have a good year, even though he struggled very much this year.
And right, with injuries and all that, yeah.
And I think that Chicago's going to make the right adjustments, get the right free agents that's going to fit their ball team to the needs that they need, especially in the outfield. Sure. So that's my prediction.
I agree with you on the Astros being the team to watch here. I would also argue that the Yankees, I know the Yankees are a big one, but I would just say the Yankees come back every year competitive, and we don't need to talk about the Yankees that long because everyone knows they have the big payroll and they come back every year. I would say the Braves are a team to watch out for next year. I know that's a big long shot, but with Ronald Acuna, Josh Raven out there pitching, I would say that coming back next year, we should watch out for them. They had one of the best prospects, and they still do have one of the highest camp out there. And I think that they're developing, and I think their future is bright, and I think people would say, oh, next 5 years, they'll be really, really good. I would say watch out for them from the next year because veterans are attracted to places where there's young stars because they know that they can shine alongside them.
All right, good point. Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. It's not a song that's ringing in both New York and in the Boston locker room. It's ringing in Cleveland over this weekend. Two different head coaches were fired. Obviously, Tyronn Lue, head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And just breaking today, Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley of the Cleveland Browns, both also fired. So a lot of turnover in that city. We're going to start talking about the Cleveland Browns, and then we'll transition later to the Cavaliers. But Hugh Jackson was, he won 3 games in about 2.5 years?
3-36-1. That was his record with the Browns.
Do you think he should have even lasted this long?
I think it's a joke. I honestly do. Thinking that the Browns, after watching all other head coaches, if they had a bad start, like a bad 4-game series, they were completely cut. You saw that with the Giants head coach. What was his name? Ben McAdoo. He had a bad season. One bad season. They cut him right away. You see Chip Kelly having one bad season, he's cut from the 49ers. I can't believe that a coach that goes 0-16 in the regular season has another chance the next year. It's mind-boggling to me because you can't – there's literally no momentum going into the next year except maybe the number one pick.
Here's what I would argue, though. With the firing and replacement of their general manager with John Dorsey coming in, I think he wanted a coach who would help him do it his way. John Dorsey obviously made some controversial moves, like Josh Gordon leaving town, Corey Coleman. He put them out early, and they still thought Corey Coleman had potential. I think he made a great move with Baker. We'll see how that plays out, obviously. I think he did, but this next couple of years will tell. But Dorsey obviously didn't look at the left tackle spot when Joe Thomas left, so that's a knock on him that they're saying right now. Their left tackle spot has a lot of issues.
Yep.
They let Joe Thomas retired, so they needed to replace him. I mean, when you have someone of that caliber retire, it's kind of tough to replace him anyways. Great Madden player, by the way, Joe Thomas. I loved him. And I would just say Dorsey wants someone who can do it his way, and I would say at this point, Jackson has kind of lost that vision, I think, from the outside looking in. I would say Dorsey misjudged the situation and that Jackson just kind of lost the respect in his eyes that he first had. I don't think Dorsey wanted to come in and do a full turnover of the organization and just completely fire everyone. I think he wanted to try and keep going with what they had and just put a different vision for success for the organization. That's kind of what they did if you watched Hard Knocks with earning your stripes and stuff like that, whereas the players didn't have stripes on their helmets in training camp. They had to earn those. They had to make this team because you want to be on an NFL team. You want to be on the Browns because the Browns are a good team to be on. And that's what they kind of, they tried to reinvent themselves, and I think he was hoping that the same team, the same staff and team would stay there so we didn't have to fire everybody. But now I think he's seeing that he has a chance to pick his new coach, and if he's able to pick his new coach next year, that will be better than what he tried to do with a turnover with the same one.
But John Dorsey had to have some red flags going into this year with Hugh Jackson coming in with what was it, 1-21 record? No, 1-31 record. 1-31. That's an incredibly abysmal record to have as a head coach. You can't, I mean, maybe John Dorsey had that vision. Hugh Jackson's the kind of guy I want on my team as a head coach. I see his vision. But it's hard for me to wrap my mind around having a coach that doesn't win. If you want your organization to win, you have a coach that knows how to win. And Hugh Jackson doesn't know how to win for the past two seasons before John Dorsey came
in. Well, that was what John Dorsey was supposed to help him do.
But
I know he didn't, but part of the reason that he's also fired is because Haley and him did not have a good relationship at all. You could see it in Hard Knocks. You could see all the way through. That's why Hard Knocks is such a valuable look in an organization. Haley and Jackson just did not mesh well together. So that's probably why they're both gone now. The Browns didn't want to have this drama on the inside of the organization and them two not working together. And Jackson was considering taking over play calling duties, which just would have created more of a rift in the organization. So I think the Browns weeded out a division in the organization. Obviously, I don't really like their new interim head coach, so I think they'll probably choose a new one after the season.
Just so people know, Greg Williams, who was the Browns' defensive coordinator, has been announced as the interim head coach, and Freddie Kitchens is now their offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I think they should have made a different choice other than Greg Williams, I would say. But at this point, you fire the offensive coordinator and the coach, and if you're going to keep the defensive coordinator, you kind of assume he will become the head coach.
That's interim, right?
Interim, yes.
Interim, okay.
So obviously it is still up in the air whether or not Greg Williams will become that head coach. I'd say oddsly and likely towards no. But can you guys identify some candidates out there right now who you think maybe would be good in this role?
I would say DeFilippo from the Vikings, their offensive coordinator. Obviously been a head coaching candidate for a while. Took this job with the Vikings. Probably as a bridge job to a higher, I would say, job. More high-profile job. So head coaching job. So I think anyone should give DeFilippo a look in any capacity. I don't really know a bunch of other people. I would say it depends on who's fired this year. So I would say there's some young coaches that might be on the edge. Obviously, there's former coaches like Romeo Crennel, who's a possible one. But other than that, right now, I would say the Browns just need to wait and look at offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators from other teams that possibly have a bright future. I would like to see the Browns go young. I think the best thing to do is to reinvent yourself with a young, new age type of coach that will help revitalize the association as a whole and make the Browns a new team. I would say that's the best thing to do, bring in a new perspective, a completely fresh view. I think that's kind of what Jackson was saying earlier, that Hugh Jackson should have been gone earlier.
Right, yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely what I was saying. But for me, I'm going to go a little bit. One candidate jumps out in my mind, Norv Turner from the Panthers. He's, after being fired from his job with the San Diego Chargers at the time, he has reinvented two teams' offenses, the Vikings and the Panthers. Both of those teams had the most explosive offenses that I've seen, like Cam Newton and Christian McCaffrey and DJ Moore in the Panthers system right now are just obliterating defenses, and just what Norv Turner did in Minnesota. I'm not sure how Norv would respond to a head coaching job after what happened in, with the Chargers. What he has going on right now seems really, really good for him. But for me, as a Browns, their defense is pretty solid. Looking at it, it's not the defense that's the problem. It's the offense that I'm thinking as like they fired their offensive coordinator and their offensively schemed head coach.
Let me just throw out another name. I think the Browns shouldn't settle on someone till after this year. But I would say you have to think about Lincoln Riley, University of Oklahoma coach. It's not hard to think of the guy who was the offensive coordinator for a while and honestly developed Baker Mayfield into what he is. So it would seem kind of interesting if they could reunite those two. I think Baker has a lot of love for that guy for sticking with him from a walk-on to where he is now. And I think, honestly, the Browns should give him a look in that capacity. Obviously, DeFilippo also has more experience on his record. But I'd say Oklahoma's pretty successful so far this season, so I'd say why not give him that look. Someone I'd also like to mention is our favorite offensive line coach from the Browns, Mr. Bob Wiley. Loved him in Hard Knocks. That would be my choice, just as a fan, because I would love to just hear his press conferences, because this guy's honestly the best. If you haven't seen this, look him up on YouTube, Bob Wiley, Hard Knocks. Listen to this guy, one of the funniest guys you ever hear.
We have talked about Hard Knocks more than I think I've ever talked about it in my life today. But I want to throw out another name, kind of a controversial name, still kind of a young dude, but obviously has two kind of negative experiences with head coaching at this point, Josh McDaniels. Obviously, as a Bronco fan, I'm not a huge fan of how Josh McDaniels went in his tenure with the Broncos. And then obviously last year he took the Colts job and then walked that back. So
that
do
was
you guys
a very
think,
interesting situation.
Do you guys think McDaniels is a viable candidate here, or
anyone is a viable candidate for the Broncos? I mean, the Browns. At this point, I mean, if I'm the Browns, if I'm Dorsey, I'm looking for a coach that's willing to look at my views and willing to see my mission for the team to propel us, because they're in rebuild right now. They're still in rebuild. And what Dorsey needs is a coach that will align with him. They need to have that relationship. So if Josh McDaniels has that relationship with John Dorsey, all for it. But John Dorsey can't rush into this. I think Greg Williams, as the defensive coordinator, right?
Yes.
Yes. He'll take care of the team for now, but Dorsey can't just rush into this. He needs to go find a guy who aligns with him.
A name I would have thrown out maybe at the beginning of the season if we were talking if Hugh Jackson would have been fired, but now I've soured on a little bit, is Matt LaFleur. Matt LaFleur is currently the offensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans. He was the offensive coordinator in Los Angeles last year. Obviously, he rose with McVay, played a role in Jared Goff breaking out, and Todd Gurley becoming arguably the best running back in the NFL right now. But seeing how the Titans season has gone so far, I've kind of soured on him a bit. I still think he's a very good offensive coordinator.
Of course.
And though the offensive problems in Tennessee definitely do not start with him, but I would have thrown him out as an option, but now I'm less sure. Do you think the Browns should go for a younger guy, like maybe a Lincoln Riley type like you mentioned, or should they go for an older, more experienced coach?
I think they need a new look in Cleveland. I'd say Cleveland needs a new look, maybe in the NBA and in the NFL. I would say needs a new look, although the players in the locker room for the Cavs might not agree, but I'd say the Browns are ready for a new look. I'd say it's time the Browns reinvented themselves, and I'm looking forward to whatever happens with them. Obviously, I hope it's not an older coach, and I might get pretty heated. I'm really invested. I've been following the Browns for a while now, just because I hate to see a team stuck in the basement for that long. So I'm hoping, just with the Hard Knocks and everything happening, I got a little attached to some of the people in that organization, especially the GOAT, Bob Wiley. So I don't know. Well, we'll see where it goes.
Jackson, I think you agree, so I'm going to skip that, but I'm going to go to you first on the Cleveland Cavaliers, because obviously Tyronn Lue has been fired, and they're looking for a new coach. Something's going on with Larry Drew. They announced him as the interim coach. it seems now that he's kind of walked that back and said he's not the interim coach.
Mm-hmm.
Presuming that he does get the job, obviously, because he's the head assistant coach they have in Cleveland and has head coaching experience, used to be the head coach in Atlanta, do you think that Larry Drew is a good fit for this Cavs team?
That's hard to say right now. Tyronn Lue, it seemed, was the right fit for this team as the Cavs were succeeding last year. However, we all know the reason why they were succeeding in Cleveland, and that was LeBron James. So, looking at this...
Wait, it wasn't Seti Osman?
I'm sorry to disappoint you, Logan. But for me, I don't think that working on the inside is going to help this organization. I think that he's a very good interim head coach. However, I'm not looking at a head coach when he says, I'm not the head coach. That's rumors right now. I'm not looking at a guy who's rejecting the head coaching job as my head coach for the future. I think that they need to go outside, just like the Cleveland Browns, the Cavaliers. LeBron era is gone. They need to reestablish themselves as their core is gone. They have Kyle Korver, my boy, but that's about it. And I think that they really need to learn the elements of rebuilding now instead of just going out to getting the biggest free agent and bringing him back. They need to get a coach who can both align with the organization and align with the players, as the players showed no resistance to Tyronn Lue being fired, as to my understanding.
I think the players are honestly trying to deal with that. They didn't see it coming this early, if it did. I think anonymously one player has spoken out. Obviously, I don't know if that's true or not, but that was a source with one player who was very angry with that situation. They supposed it to be J.R. Smith. But obviously, that's just all speculation, and I don't want to back my points up with things that aren't facts. But I think the Cavs locker room is unhappy with the perception that they're just going to be at the bottom. Nobody likes to just be labeled, through the first six games, too, as being the worst at the bottom. I mean... the Lakers lost the first three games, and everyone was on them, but not like this. Everyone's just assuming the Cavs, and no one would want to assume it like that. But I don't necessarily think it's a bad move. I just think it should have happened before the season, honestly. And with K Love reportedly being out for an extended period of time now, I think the Cavs' outlook is very dark.
Do you think they'll trade him?
They will not. Well, I don't believe they can find a suitor for Caleb while he's injured.
Kevin Love is, sources are saying that he will be out for over a month now.
He will return
if he's on that timetable before the trade deadline. And he did just sign a contract with Cleveland this offseason.
Oh, he did.
So, yes, he did. So. That does make him possibly a slightly more attractive trade piece for a team because they can own him for a couple more years. He's not just a rental. He's a piece. But do you think he's a fit in Cleveland right now, Kevin Love? Or do you think that Cleveland should be looking to trade him and rebuild around Colin Sexton and a young core?
I don't know what Cleveland's fit is necessarily. The players they have there seem like a bit of an odd collection of players. I think it was players that were a lot of shooters they tried to surround LeBron with, which I didn't really understand their approach that much with shooters surrounding LeBron. I like what the Lakers are doing a lot better. But I think it's kind of like the leftovers.
It's like LeBron. A team they've built for LeBron James, but without LeBron James.
I would have loved to see them make more moves this offseason. Either banking at the future or trying to get more veterans that they think would have good chemistry and can make them an attractive team for a star next offseason. I didn't like what they did this offseason. Too quiet. I love Colin Sexton, though. Ferocious competitor, good shooter. And just absolutely clutch. I mean, I remember in that game versus the Gophers the Minnesota Golden Gophers, where he was playing 3-on-5 and he scored like 11 points in 2 to 3 minutes and brought them back within 4 points. I mean, who goes on an 11-3 run when you're playing 3-on-5? It doesn't even make sense, but that's Colin Sexton for you right there. Clutch competitor, doesn't ever give up. I love that in a player.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And as we're going to end this topic, I want to talk a little bit about some more NBA coaching news, possibly. But I do want to go back to the NFL one second. I want to ask you guys a question. Which team do you think will be the next team to fire their head coach?
In NFL?
In the NFL.
You got to think the Cardinals 49ers, this game was a coaches on the hot seat type of game this week. With the Cardinals beating the 49ers.
Which coach, sorry?
I would argue it would be the Cardinals. More so the Cardinals. But I don't really there's been nothing really coming out of that right now. I think teams are worried about doing that during the season. I would say the 49ers, Shanahan's safer, just in terms of having been just seemingly being a good football mind, I would say. Plus, it's not like they have a bad team. I think injuries are a very telling thing. I would want the 49ers to go look for a little bit more veteran presence, especially in the wide receiving core. I would say that would be nice. And then I would look for them to stack the offensive line. I would say having such an asset as Jimmy Garoppolo and not protecting him the right way is just an injustice to how great he is. So I'm a big Jimmy G fan, and I think they need to protect him.
Great answer. But the question was, what team is going to fire their coach next? And is it Arizona for you then?
I think Arizona should look at that, but Wilkes is a new coach. So I would say that the next team to fire their coach won't be one of the lowest teams. It will be an average team, but I'm just not really sure at this point in the season that a bunch of teams are looking to him, because there's a lot of teams. The teams are so close in their divisional and conference races right now, so I would say I can't really specify.
The flip to you, Jackson. Do you have a say or opinion?
I think the 49ers are in a really deep hole right now, considering that their future was so bright with Jimmy Garoppolo. And seeing how far they've fallen without him has been very concerning for me, especially having Kyle Shanahan, who was coaching the 49ers last year, having that momentum being built up and having it depleted so fast in this season. I think that Kyle Shanahan is definitely on the hot seat, for sure. And I would say that he's definitely the one that's fired next. Maybe Pat Shurmur of the Giants. But I'm not sure if the Giants are going to be willing to give him up so quick.
See, why I hesitate on those teams is because you hired them this season.
Right.
I would think it's just like college. I hired you into a team.
Well,
and because these are later season hires, they don't have as much time to build their team for the next year. And even if they do, it's one offseason. You can't fire a coach after one offseason. You can't blame him for that. A lot of the players who are under contract and you can't deal will be players the previous leadership built. And you have to keep them on the team.
Right,
so
and that's why I'm hesitating with, like, the Giants look like they're a crap show right now. I'm not sure if they're going to give up with Pat Shurmur, and I don't think they should, because Pat Shurmur did amazing in Minnesota. But not just, like, not the homer in me, but, like, our offensive scheme was something that should be hoped. And I think that Pat Shurmur will take advantage of that once Eli is out of the Giants with Odell Beckham Jr. and Saquon Barkley. That is a huge piece they needed. So, yeah, for me, it's the 49ers, for sure.
I would just like to throw out a couple names of average teams that I didn't want to throw out before. So Dolphins, Adam Gase. Bengals, Marvin Lewis.
Marvin Lewis can't lose his job.
Broncos, no. Vance Joseph. But see, these are teams that I think if the season were to turn bad, and some of them the season already is. The Ravens have lost the last three games after going a 4-1 start.
Best defense, though.
Harbaugh, what I would say... I think some people would say Gruden, but still, I would argue first-year coach. I would argue Pete Carroll's going to stay. I would argue Jason Garrett for the Cowboys. Although they're looking better recently, I would say that if it were to turn a certain way, he would be on the hot seat immediately, and I would say he would be gone. I would argue Todd Bowles for the Jets is also in that conversation. And Dirk Cutter, Vance Joseph, would also be around in that conversation.
That's strange. If I had to pick... You guys ended up picking with your first team San Francisco and Arizona, which is surprising. I would have picked either Denver or Cutter in Tampa Bay. It's hard. I'm a firm believer that you should give a coach at least 3 seasons to try to build up his team and his program, unless it seems like he has lost the locker room. And I don't see Cutter as much as losing the locker room, but Cutter obviously hasn't improved that team. But it seems like Vance Joseph has really lost that Broncos locker room. There's a lot of drama coming out of this team.
With the Demaryius Thomas,
drama and the whole Swag Kelly and the whole party deal with that. And they just have played so undisciplined this year, it seems. Critical penalties at the wrong time, a whole bunch of other different deals. Obviously, highlighted by the quarterback struggles with Case Keenum. And I think it's time for them to move on, personally. I would look at a younger coach to kind of rebuild that team, just reset the culture around it. And John Elway is, I think, a great executive. He obviously built a Super Bowl contender and a team that was very competitive under him for his first few years of his tenure, especially with Peyton Manning at quarterback. But he's really struggled to find the answer. And I think, personally, that resetting that with a new, younger head coach to inject some energy and a new quarterback could really do wonders.
Yeah, well, I think the Broncos do need to look in another direction. I would argue they need to make some moves this offseason, but I think Elway will wait for the offseason to make those type of moves. I'd say he's looking forward to free agency, but I would say free up some cap now for free agency. I actually haven't looked at what their cap. I should do that. I haven't looked at what their cap hit would be next year. But I would argue he needs to capitalize on assets, and if I was the person, I would send Demaryius Thomas on the outs, make sure I have Emmanuel Sanders as my veteran wide receiver for the future.
All right. I'm going to move to that piece of NBA coaching information that I noted earlier. Rick Pitino, former Louisville head coach, was a former head coach for the Boston Celtics and the New York Knicks. He just came out and said that he wants to coach in the NBA again. I don't know how long we're going to end up spending on this, but I just want to ask you guys, do you think Pitino would be a good NBA coach, especially with the way he left college basketball at Louisville? That was a real messy situation that still – it's still a great, huge mess that we're trying to solve and won't be solved for a long time. So just to get back on topic, do you think Pitino is a good fit in the NBA today?
Yes, I would say that Pitino would be a good, I would specify assistant coach. I would say he needs to prove himself again. I know it's a higher level, and he has coached at a higher level. I would argue college is a higher level, but I would say, if I was an NBA coach looking for an assistant, I would have his name in the conversation for that. But I don't see teams trusting him that much right now. He needs to clarify some things about his story. I know some stuff, like, he didn't know about anything, but I would say in the interview there'd be questions about that we wouldn't hear about as the public. And if he were to represent himself in a good way, I think he would get that job. I think he has the ability. I think it's just about him building his reputation back, and that's why he's making this move. I would say that he obviously has the money already. I think he does. This is just what he loves to do. So.
Yeah, Rick Pitino. Really tragic how that Louisville situation went down for him. It's a tough question because it's emotionally hard for a guy who was so well respected and so successful in his college games, in his college career, that it's hard to come back from a scandal such as what happened with Louisville. So with NBA teams, if they're willing to take the chance and looking back at his career and saying you did well with what you did with your organizations, and if you feel like that you are ready emotionally and mentally, because we're going to need you 100% here if you're going to come coach my team. So if you want to prove yourself, I think Jacob is right in saying that he shouldn't be thrown into like a Cleveland Cavaliers situation right now. I think assistant coaching would be just fine for him. He just needs to make sure that the mental barriers are not there for him when he's trying to control a team.
That's what I was going to mention, because Pitino obviously left Louisville in scandal.
Disgraced.
Yeah, it really, his reputation damaged, and he's been trying to rebuild it, but there's only so much you can do, and this will probably always be a huge red mark on his resume.
I mean, are you sure he left disgraced?
Yes.
I think
in my opinion, he did. But do you, you make your argument. Did you not think he left disgraced?
I think he still maintains some weight in the basketball world. I don't think he's completely out of it. I mean, you can't dispute winning.
Oh, I'm not. I'm not disputing his winning. No, I think he was a very good coach. Obviously, won two national championships with Louisville and was very successful at Kentucky before that. But I just think the way he left, obviously, still regarded as a great basketball coach and a great basketball mind, but serious character concern. Letting that go down under his nose, and you can argue how much he knew about that or not. Yeah. But then with trying to cover it up and all that. I just think it's hard to take that chance on a guy whose reputation has suffered a serious damage. Yes. And could therefore damage somebody else's reputation. I don't know how many NBA executives and owners would be willing to take that chance.
Mm-hmm. I would say it is a chance and it is a risk. I would reiterate that. I think that needs to be a big thing in discussions if you're thinking of Rick Pitino. And I would say the best part about the NBA is you're able to spend time interviewing and getting to know these people during this offseason. So I think he's going to just ramp up for this offseason, get his name in the news. Obviously, it won't be hard for him to get his name back in the news because of the scandal. So teams will know he's out there. And I think he will get looks from teams. I think it's about how he represents himself in those meetings.
All right. Let's move on to Tampa Bay. We touched on him early with Cutter, but obviously the Buccaneers' revolving door quarterback situation this year has been an absolute mess.
Absolutely.
Ryan Fitzmagic, Jameis Winston, both of them have shown promise, but both of them have also showed that they're probably not capable of taking this team to the playoffs, let alone at a 500 record. So what do you think that Tampa Bay should do at quarterback? Obviously, I think the three of us agree that Ryan Fitzpatrick is not a long-term answer at quarterback, not just because of his age, but he has shown that he is not a quarterback that you can have on a championship-winning level team. So do you think that the Buccaneers stick with Jameis? Or maybe they're one of those teams that are looking at drafting a quarterback early or even a free agent quarterback to be like Teddy Bridgewater.
Mm. The Jameis Winston experiment is over in Tampa Bay. I would say elsewhere he could probably find a job and compete for it and prove himself. I would say there's no doubt he's a slinger. But with Ryan Fitzpatrick starting this next week, I would say they stick with him for the rest of the season, no matter how it goes. And I would say I'm a big believer in the Fitzmagic. And I believe the Buccaneers will make the playoffs as more than a wild card this year. With Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback, I would argue that they will make the playoffs as more than a wild card this year. That is my hot take for today and maybe for this whole week.
You heard it here, folks.
That's one of the hottest takes I've ever heard.
I'm pretty hot. I don't know.
Just for a reference in that NFC South, so we can give people an idea of how interesting of a take that is. Tampa Bay is currently tied with Atlanta for bottom in that division at 3-4. Carolina and New Orleans are above them. New Orleans in the lead at 6-1, and Carolina at 5-2. They are currently in line for a wild card spot.
What's the only team that beat the Saints?
The Buccaneers.
With Fitzmagic. The Buccaneers are a better team than the Saints if they're able to lengthen the field. I would not say they're a better overall team. It's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if they're able to expose the Saints secondary like they did in week one, they expose them for being able to create big plays. That puts the pressure on the Saints offense. The Saints defense is all about giving Drew Brees time to manage the game and play the way he loves to play. I'm not saying that the Buccaneers are a better overall team. I would say that the Buccaneers, I would say, give them the best chance in that division to beat the Saints. I would say the Panthers.
But the Buccaneers aren't playing the Saints for the rest of their games.
No, they're not.
To run through that schedule, they still have two games against Carolina left.
Give me who they're playing. I'll tell you if they're going to win or lose.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. From week 9 to 17. I'm going to ask both of you, because this is interesting.
Okay, yes. Yeah, for sure.
We're going to see. All right. Week 9, they play at Carolina. Who do you got?
Wait, this is Fitzmagic still starting.
We don't know what Dirk Cutter is going to do.
I said
an innovator
Fitz
offensive
magic.
Mind.
If Fitzmagic starts the rest of the games. All right, we'll go into that. I'll go with that.
Right. Fitzmagic starting.
Yep.
All right. Week 9, they play at Carolina.
And may I say, DeSean Jackson stays with the team because there's rumors of him leaving. I would say he stays.
All right.
Okay. Go ahead.
Keep going. Sorry.
All right. Week 9, they play in Carolina against the Panthers.
That's a win.
Loss.
Win for
keep
who?
Going. Keep going. Buccaneers.
Okay. Week 10 versus Washington at home.
They win.
Win.
Huh. All right. Week 11, they go into New York.
They're 4-4,
right? At this point, they're 3-4.
They're 3-4.
You've got them at 5-4 if they they win their two.
Yeah,
you got them at
5-5. Wait.
You've got them at 6-5. Or 5-6.
5-6, yep, sorry.
Anyway, week 11, they go into New York and play the Giants.
No, I have them at 4-6.
Whatever. Week 11, they go in and play the Giants.
You saying they're losing to the Redskins?
Yeah. I mean, I thought they were winning.
He said they were beating the Redskins. You both said they beat Washington.
Yeah.
Anyway, week 11, Giants.
They're 6-4. They win.
They win the Giants.
Week 12, San Francisco at home.
They win.
They beat San Francisco.
7-4.
You think they're rattling off four in a row?
I think they're rattling off four in a row.
I don't have that confidence in them. Week 13, they play Carolina.
Lost.
This time,
I would say they lose this time.
Okay. I was going to say this time they are at home against Carolina.
I would
say
they win one of those matchups.
Week 14, it's a battle against New Orleans. It's the second game they'll play against them.
I would say they win.
That's a loss.
I would say they win. I would say if Fitzmagic's your starting quarterback and they maintain DeSean Jackson and Mike Evans, the same thing as week one will happen and they will expose the Saints secondary for deep, big plays.
Absolutely.
Week 15, they play Baltimore.
Cool. I like saying absolutely not to other people's ideas with no logical reason.
Hey. Skip. This conversation is absolutely necessary. And we need to keep having it. Week 15, they play in Baltimore.
Win. By that time, Baltimore will be down, I believe, and having a big downturn in their season of losing.
I think that the Baltimore will win. I think that
Let me have another hot take. Lamar Jackson will be the starting quarterback for Baltimore in that game.
Cool.
But I love big game Joe Flacco.
He's an elite quarterback.
Elite sauce, baby. Elite sauce.
I think the Baltimore Ravens will show up with their defense and completely just expose the Buccaneers' offense.
All right. Week 16, they play Dallas at Jerry World.
They win.
They win.
And 10-5.
And week 17, they play Atlanta.
Oh, my God.
Atlanta, they win.
I think you had them winning out. There is no way that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers win
they
out.
They lost. They lost to
once.
The Panthers.
They lost once.
Oh, okay. 10-6. There is no way.
I argue that the Falcons.
There's no way.
The Falcons in week 17 have nothing to play for.
Winston couldn't win a peewee football game at
he
this
won't
point.
Be the starting quarterback. Fitzpatrick will. This is conditional.
This isn't an academic decathlon.
Okay.
He went to Harvard. That doesn't help him here.
All right. Watch it happen. Let's move on.
All right. Let's move on. Fine.
Oh,
fine. We'll move on.
Let's go to
obviously,
winners and losers for this weekend.
All right. We are going to go to that. So there was a whole bunch of stuff that happened. We just want to recap it, give some quick winners and losers for the weekend.
Saints. Saints are a winner this weekend.
Obviously,
Saints.
The Saints are a winner. I think that was a big statement win for them to beat that Minnesota team.
Also, the Panthers taking down the Ravens. Big win this weekend. The Ravens obviously had that good defense, like Jackson is telling us many times. And the Panthers taking it out, so the Panthers proved a lot. I would also say the new Cardinals offensive coordinator, Byron Leftwich, beating the 49ers. I would like to point out it is the 49ers having a down year this year. But first game as offensive coordinator, actually having some production out of his offense. I mean, he got Larry Fitzgerald to have a really good game, actually, for the first time this season. If Byron Leftwich can work with Josh Rosen, I believe that they can become a good combination. And I saw some sparks in that game. But I will put it out there. It's one game, and it's the 49ers having a down year this year. So I will put that out there. I would say the Redskins are a winner this weekend. Versus the Giants, but it is the Giants. But I would say, can we just talk about AP? Oh my goodness. Looked amazing again. Having watched him on the Vikings and then feeling bad for him as he went to the Saints and Alvin Kamara turned out to be a hype beast. And Mark Ingram, I was been pretty good. It was tough to see him do, but I would say he looks like he's got a good 2-3 more years in him right now. The way he's running, getting 2 touchdowns. He's catching passes. I haven't seen him do that in a while, catching passes and taking to the end zone. That's amazing. Obviously, we talk about losers. Hugh Jackson, definite loser, no longer an NFL coach. And it's very hard to see Hugh Jackson getting another shot as an NFL head coach. I mean, 11-41-1 overall record. That is one of the, I believe, fourth worst. Is that right? Fourth worst winning percentage?
It's down there.
It's down there. Another loser, Jameis Winston, benched again. One touchdown, four interceptions. He averaged two interceptions a game. He averaged zero touchdowns to two interceptions, so his touchdown to interception ratio, 0-2. So for every touchdown, he threw two interceptions a game, which is not very great, giving the other team the ball twice for every time you score. I would say it's time to turn the Fitz magic, and I would say he can help the Buccaneers turn it around, as we just discussed. And then I would say another loser is Le'Veon Bell. I just think at this point he needs to find a trade, or he needs to come back. He should have already come back, I think. He should have come back, played really well, and requested a trade. I would say at some point his value decreases because teams are worried about how he'll commit to their team in the future. And I would say he's going to have to come back and play for the Steelers. I would say he's not a loser in terms of the contract he'll get next year. Everyone's not disputing he's an elite running back. I would just say if I were teams, I would have been pressuring the Steelers. And if I was the Steelers, I would have traded Le'Veon Bell by now. I believe James Conner is a great running back. And just the way he runs is quite similar. And he's multifunctional as a pass catcher and a running back. So I would say they found a good running back out of their backfield in James Conner, and they pay him way less than Le'Veon Bell, so why not trade Le'Veon Bell? And you might even get a great first-round pick this year if you go for the future. And I would say the Steelers need to start looking in the direction of a quarterback.
Keep it short. Just say the player. Who do you think starts in that Steelers backfield next year, Conner or Le'Veon?
Conner.
All right. Jackson, you got any winners or losers from the weekend?
Okay. Yeah, I do, actually. Going off the Cardinals note that Jacob made, I'm going with Josh Rosen as my biggest winner this week. Yes, he did face an abysmal 49ers defense. However, this is a huge step for a rookie when he's been destroyed so many times this season, so many times let down by his defense. I think that this is a really good stepping stone for Josh Rosen because I know he's the right choice for this Arizona Cardinals offense. I know that he fits the scheme that they want to do. And they have the pieces to do that, to revolve around him, and to have him succeed as a player. So Josh Rosen getting that confidence, getting that swagger back that he had in college and a little bit into the season here, I think that this week was a huge week for him to get that swagger back. And I think
do you think
really
you can evaluate him at one game, though?
Let's
evaluate him so far this season. Or are you saying it's wrong to evaluate him because of the team that's built around him right now? Are you saying you saw a glimpse of the potential he could have with a good offensive line? Because he was relatively well protected on Sunday.
Oh, absolutely.
With the 49ers, their pass rush didn't get to him a lot. I would just argue his completion percentage is around 50, on average 53%, which is not very great. And his interceptions are really high. He's thrown six so far. This season, and threw three against the Broncos.
That Broncos game was hard, though. They were getting a lot of pressure in on him, and it was I think it was kind of a big game for them. Just so we can get it, Rosen's stat line last week, he was 23 of 40 for 252 yards with two touchdowns and an interception. But he did start getting Larry Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald had his biggest game of the season. And David Johnson showed some more potential in that game. Johnson got 60 yards, but was slightly more involved in the offense in general. And as you said earlier, I think that's partly to do with Byron Leftwich finally helping that team out.
But
what I would argue to support your point is their yards per game have increased. So I would say that tells you that his completion of passes plus things like that have been better, plus his decision making has been better. Choosing the right people to throw the ball to. Plus, I've also seen him extending the field. He had one really good throw, I believe, that was like 23 yards to Fitzgerald. That was a really nice throw yesterday. Stepped up in the pocket, avoided the pass rush, and threw a really nice throw downfield. I would say for him, the key is he does have the arm strength, and he does have the vision. He needs to just be able to be mature in the decisions he makes, and he also needs to extend the field.
Right.
And I think maybe that's what Leftwich will help with.
Right. And also, just make this really quick. The Cardinals did experience a comeback. Josh Rosen did lead the Cardinals to a nice comeback, 15 points in the fourth quarter to beat the 49ers. So I think that's also helping him. He's a little bit of that feel of what a championship quarterback knows how to do, and championship quarterbacks know how to win games.
The Aaron Rodgers effect. That's correct. Another loser this weekend, Green Bay Packers. Ooh. Wow. What I've been hearing
is... I'd say Ty Montgomery is the loser there.
I heard Ty Montgomery, previous possession, got pulled from the game for Jamal Williams, and Aaron Jones played the rest of that snap. Was extremely angry at the coach, I've heard, out of the locker room. The coach told him, Mike McCarthy told him to kneel the next kickoff. And Ty Montgomery took it out of the end zone. Disobeyed the coach and fumbled it. And Aaron Rodgers was visibly seen on TV extremely upset. And I've never seen him lose that composure, but I've been told, or I've been reading, that he's angry at Montgomery because he disobeyed McCarthy, and he should have just taken a damn knee, is what he said. I will now do my 10 push-ups.
Just going to call you out on that. You got any other winners and losers before I go to mine?
No, I'm that's fine, thank you.
All right, I'm going to switch up our focus for this, and I'm going to look at college football. I don't think we've talked quite enough about college football on the show compared to what I've liked to, but obviously there's so much going on professionally that can sometimes get lost in the shuffle. So with my first winner, I'm going to go single out Nebraska Cornhuskers, who have now won two games in a row. They just beat Bethune-Cookman this weekend, 45-9, obviously not a fantastic team compared to the level that Nebraska plays at. But after beating Minnesota last weekend, I think Scott Frost is finally starting to get some momentum there. Mm-hmm. And I'm just happy that that team is able to win some games. I think he is a great coach. I think he's going to help that program become revitalized. But it's definitely going to take some time for him to build that program up again. Another big winner, Oregon State. Oregon State had an amazing comeback against a very good Colorado team this last weekend. And that'll obviously get lost in the shuffle again. Oregon State, West Coast team. Not all their games are televised because they're not a great team. But really, it was a huge win for them. Also, shout out in that Pac-12 Arizona State, Herm Edwards ended up beating USC this last weekend, 38-35. I think that was a huge win for that team. Clemson. Clemson's another big winner, especially Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence had an incredible game. But with losers, Texas and Florida. Texas ranked number 6, Florida ranked number 9. Texas getting upset by Oklahoma State, 38-35. That probably eliminates their chances of making it to the college football playoff, which is disappointing. Texas seems they're not quite back yet, but I've really liked the promise this team has shown. And Florida laid an absolute egg of a game against Georgia, 36-17 they lost. Just dominated the entire game, and it was just, I was surprised to see that. Another loser for me, guy I think, I know I'm a huge fan of, I don't know how you both feel about him, but Justin Herbert, starting quarterback from Oregon. Oregon was absolutely demolished against Arizona this weekend, 44-15. Herbert was 24-48 for 168, two touchdowns and an interception, which isn't a terrible stat line, but from what I've watched him this season, he's just looked like a guy I think knows how to win games, and he just didn't show up, and it's real disappointing. Also, I'd like to shout out Kansas. Kansas beat TCU. They snapped a 38-game losing streak in October, and they are now 3-5 this year with two wins against Power 5 teams. Kansas is looking up. Kansas football.
How about Duke football?
What did Duke football do this weekend?
Duke football won on a last second play.
That's right.
They're ranking alive.
So, I think Duke football has got a good quarterback there. I've seen him linked with the NFL draft. Some people think he might be able to go kind of high.
Wow, that's crazy. Duke, usually seen as a basketball school, as we all know. Should we get to some trade deadline news?
Yes, we can, but I'd just like to note real fast, Duke football lost this weekend, 45-54. Mm-hmm. So it seems you're mistaken, but I've still seen a lot of...
No, last weekend.
Oh, last weekend. I thought you said this weekend. I was really confused. But I'd still like to shout out Daniel Jones, who is starting to get some traction with some NFL draft news. So, yeah, I'll turn it over to you. You can tell us some trade deadline news. Obviously, the NFL trade deadline is tomorrow.
At 3.
At least 3 Eastern time?
Correct, yeah.
3 Eastern time. So there is some time for some deals to go through, and if they're going to go through, they're going to go through fast. So we're going to see a lot of news about
that. I'm just going to throw out some names here. I'll get into more detail, but not too much. We've got to get moving here. Tyrod Taylor, Nick Foles, Le'Veon Bell, Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, Pierre Garcia.